Hello and welcome to another edition of Starside Chat. I am one of your hosts, Aaron, with me as always is Zach. How's it going, Zach?
Good. I'm getting pretty excited about Starfield, and I feel like a lot of Starfield details have been talked about this last week.
We're in the countdown to September 9th, is it?
6th, I think.
Is it 6th?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily when people will start playing it. We were talking a little bit before this. Let's, I guess, just dive into news, because most of our news is about Starfield this week. It's unclear exactly how this is going to work, but if you pay for a premium edition of Starfield, you'll start to get to play the game like 5 days early or some amount of days early.
Yeah, I think you get 5 days early access. So the game launches officially on the 6th, but you can start playing it on the 1st if you buy like the deluxe edition, which I think it's technically $100, but so the game costs $70, and then there's like a $30 upgrade for the deluxe edition, and they have them separately, specifically because they know some people are going to be playing this on Game Pass, and they want that upsell. But then there's also the Constellation edition, which is the $300 edition. But but yeah, if you want to play it early on September 1st, you have to get that deluxe upgrade. And the confusing thing about that, which maybe they've answered this, I don't know, but I can't seem to find a good answer just doing some basic Googling. But if you buy a physical copy of Starfield or you pre-order it, you're not going to get that until the 6th, because unless they make a mistake, which maybe you can talk the people who have no clue what's going on at Walmart or Target into giving you a copy early if they've got them. But so that's what the game is on. But you can get the deluxe upgrade supposedly on September 1st. I don't know maybe it comes with like a digital download code. So even if you want the physical copy, they'll give you a digital download code. I don't know. Or maybe you just have to sub to Game Pass for a month just to start playing this and use your code for the upgrade. But it's very confusing to me how, if you're going the physical route, how you're going to get early access.
Another date that we became aware of, a bunch of people on Twitter were talking about how they're now playing Starfield, but the review embargoes don't go off until August 31st. So that's when we're going to start to get all of the articles about Starfield.
Yeah, so the review copies have gone out. I've seen like a bunch of people talking about how they're super excited because they're reviewing the game and they actually have like a review code to be able to play the game, which is very cool. And so yeah, the embargo on that is going to lift probably about the time you're going to be able to possibly get early access, I guess, depending on which version of the game you got. But yeah, preload is already, like, you're already able to preload this thing if you got the digital version or if you're on Game Pass. So you can already download Starfield, which is very, very cool. As we're recording this, it's already live. So on the 17th, I believe, or maybe it's the 17th if you're on Xbox and the 30th if you have the Steam version. But yeah, it's like we're getting down to it, which is very exciting to me.
They released a couple of extra details about it. There was like a stream where they were talking about stuff. They did a Discord Q&A where they answered some questions about Starfield, including that Starfield will have a jail system. If you're caught committing a crime, you can either submit or go to jail or pay a fine or go full renegade and try to evade the law. But this is pretty similar to, I'm sure, whenever you played Skyrim, at one point or another, you may have gotten captured and put in jail. There was a whole plot line, I think, in Markarth, where you were put in jail and like all your stuff was taken away. But yeah, there's going to be like cops, which is a thing talking about like other big RPGs like this. Cyberpunk didn't really launch with like a cop system, other than like sometimes they would shoot at you. But this will have like a full-fledged, I would assume, storyline if you go to jail. It's not going to be like Skyrim or Oblivion where there's like a little paperclip that you can get yourself out of, I assume, with like a lockpick. But I don't know. Do you think you're gonna go to jail in this game?
Play like a space pirate sort of a playthrough.
Yeah,
that could be fun. It's a good question. I haven't really considered exactly what I'm gonna do once I get into Starfield. I've been so excited about the game releasing that I haven't even like planned out or mapped out what I want to do once I get into the game. But yeah, maybe that's something to try just to see what happens.
They also have said that there is unfortunately no full pacifist playthrough. There is not a way to beat the game without killing at least one person.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are some people who love to do like a full pacifist run, and I wondered if like you may have to kill someone, but maybe you can get one of your companions to do it so you don't have to be the one that did it. But I don't know if that's sort of a workaround, but that sort of bridges to the next thing. They talked about how there's going to be more than 20 companions that you can recruit on your missions. And that some of them can be romanced as well.
Now, they said this. They said there's 20 companions. And I know that when you start to collect people, they can ride on your ship. And I wonder how many companions you can get on your ship. Like, is it a point where you go full Normandy and you can have a ship that's big enough where 20 people are currently on it?
I would assume if they decided that you could have 20 companions, they probably made it so that you can have a ship large enough to hold 20 companions, because otherwise you would just have to leave people around. But I know you can
leave people at bases as well. Like, you can make the outpost and you can just assign someone to the outpost and that's where they'll live.
Yeah, so that, I mean, I assume that it's a thing that will be possible to just have them all on your ship at once if you don't want to deal with the outpost thing. But I also assume that a lot of people are going to make outposts and assign crew members to work there. But I think it's cool. That seems like a lot of companions. They talked about how they know that companions were like a very popular feature in past Bethesda games, and so they wanted to really like lean into that for Starfield.
They also went into a little detail about the three religions in the game. The most interesting one, though, is the religion of the Great Serpent, which I found fascinating. There's like faster than light travel in this game that I forget the terminology they use for. It's called like hopping or something. But apparently the start of this religion was that there was a group of colonists who like went through a hyperlight jump or whatever, which normally feels instantaneous to you. But supposedly a person on this colony ship, the jump did not feel instantaneous. And he claims, he or she, I don't know what person it is or if they're still alive in the game, but they claim that the like during that jump, they were conscious for like millennia or something. And they met a giant serpent that is the god of everything and is eventually going to come to the universe and encircle the universe in its giant tail. And so that's what that religion believes. And you're going to have to deal with them. But I thought it was very interesting lore. I forgot how I have oftentimes gotten lost in like the lore of like Skyrim and the Elder Scrolls, because the Wikipedia is dense. I forget what it's called, what their version of Wikipedia is called, but there's like such interesting lore about how the like planet that Skyrim takes place on came to be and like what happened to the dwarves and stuff. So I think Starfield's gonna be like packed with like really interesting small stories just about the world.
Yeah, I assume that you'll be able to find little books laying around that you can really get a lot of lore and things, and people will be sort of making lore videos explaining a lot of this stuff for years and years and years. But yeah, it's very cool, I think. I know like Fallout games and Elder Scrolls games had like these weird little groups that had like different religions. Like there was in Fallout, I think they had like these people that like sort of worshipped the bomb in that one town.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, Do you think that you'll be able to nuke a town in Starfield?
That's a good question. I wonder if, here's something I have been wondering a lot about, because it would certainly be a grand set piece. I wonder if you can, at some point, destroy a whole planet, or if you witness a whole planet being destroyed. Because that would look very cool, and it would lead to, I think, a cool sequence of, like, you know, having space flight and kind of like a Halo type sequence where, like, you're getting away from this thing and the whole, like, structure that you're on is, like, disintegrating around you, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if their engine allows for something like that, but I don't know. It's a good question. I wonder if at some point, I mean, with all these types of games, they'll have all the fun little stories and side quests and, like, guild missions you can do, but the overarching plot is something that affects, you know, all of society or whatever. So I wonder if there will be a point where someone is like, well, here's this small exoplanet. Let's go to check it out. And then the entire planet explodes. Actually, I'll go on record as saying I think that is going to happen. So prove me wrong, Starfield.
Whether it's like a main story or side quest of some sort, or you basically lead to
really
the destruction
cool.
of an entire planet.
Yeah, I don't know how it would happen or what it would look like. I also wouldn't... I mean, I don't know. They said there's all, like... What was their talking point that they've walked back a little now? That there's, like, 999 planets or something?
I don't remember what it was. Yeah, they said at one point how many planets there were. But I think they want it to not seem like there is... you know, fully established where there are like cities and people in every yeah. single one of them. And some of them are more like just wide open spaces where you get resources and that kind of thing.
But I don't know. It's interesting. I'm trying to think of a time in like Skyrim where the landscape was forever changed by a quest. Like, I don't think like most cities you went to in Skyrim were pretty static. Like, you would go yeah, there, it's I all, mean, like, you know, eight buildings.
There's not, like, you know, the technology of a nuclear bomb in Elder Scrolls sort of.
Well, but
there
are, like,
time.
Dragons. Like, yeah. I mean, I guess the first town you go to, the tutorial town where, yeah. like, you've just escaped, that gets destroyed in a big set piece.
And you can go back there again later, and it is just, like, in ruins, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'll be interested to see... that there's that old phrase, I forget who made it. It was like Call of Duty or someone called like Levolution.
Oh, where the yeah, level that was evolves. Battlefield. Yeah.
I wonder if there will be any sort of like Levolution where there's a point of no return for like, if, hey, if you didn't like explore this planet, better do it before you do this quest because afterwards there won't be a planet there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, I think in like Fallout New Vegas, it might have been where. There are so many like different quest lines tied to being sort of aligned with certain factions or whatever mm-hmm. that where I think if you like kill a, you know, a person or you align with a different one, you just get these little pop-up messages that's like, oh, this quest failed or this. Yeah. And it kind of is disconcerting because you're like, wait, how did I just ruin all of these quest lines? And then you realize, oh, wait, it's just because that's one direction I could have gone and I chose to go yeah. a different way. Which, I mean, it makes, like, replays of the game that much more interesting, but I wonder if there'll be something similar to that in this game. I feel like they didn't do that in Fallout 4, but...
Yeah. Still a lot of unanswered questions, even though we're so close, and we've gotten all that gameplay, but... Very curious for the 31st to roll around to start to see. I mean, this isn't in our show notes, but... Something that's being like extremely well reviewed right now is Baldur's Gate 3, which is getting IGN gave it a 10 out of 10. And I think like PC Gamer gave it its highest score of any game ever. It got like a 97 or something.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we'll see a return of that with Starfield, where again, people will be like, here's another banger. Like this, like 2023 is just like knocking it out of the park every week. Or if people will be like, well, Baldur's Gate was great for these reasons, and Starfield is not great for these reasons.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy how close they came out to each other.
I feel like you will get some of that, because it's almost the Elden Ring effect, where like once that came out, you just had a lot of people throwing shade at different games that didn't quite deserve it. Yeah. But they're like, yeah, but we're in a post-Elden Ring world now. And it's just like, okay, but if you're not directly comparing them, if you're you know, reviewing Starfield for Starfield and not only, like, the point of your review is to compare it directly to this other game that exists. It's just like, I do a little bit get frustrated when every single time, like, an open world game comes out, they make a lot of comparisons to Elden Ring. It's just like, not every open world game is going to be Elden Ring, and you don't have to compare it to that every single time now. Like, I get, like, everybody loves to, like, find a benchmark and be like, okay, how do you stack up to this one? Do you live up or not? Like, well, they're different games with different visions, and people are trying to do different things with them. You don't have to make that comparison every time. But, especially with this being so close to Baldur's Gate and the fact that they're both RPGs, and there are a bunch of companions. They're very different games, though. So, but I do think you will get that, where people are going to be making a lot of comparisons, you know, for good or for bad, saying, oh, this doesn't do this thing that Baldur's Gate does. But I guess that's how you sort of make your determination on Game of the Year, which I'm sure will happen. This and Baldur's Gate and Zelda. Yeah.
Speaking of making your determination, have you decided yet if you're going to be going Xbox or PC?
I am going to go Xbox. So I will be capped at 30 frames a second. But so the trade-off I've had to make with the state my computer is in is, do I want to lower the graphics and all of these like quality settings down to the point where it doesn't look as good as it would look on Xbox, but I might get a higher frame rate. And so that's sort of the trade-off I have to go to. And like I talked about it before, but I've played like a handful of games through Game Pass where you could play it on both platforms. And I ended up preferring the way it looked and ran on the Xbox to what I had to do to get it running well on my PC. So I don't know if that, and some of that was, you know, Atomic Heart and Redfall, and those games didn't run well anyway. Like, they weren't really very well optimized. So like, maybe that's not a good comparison, and maybe I should look at it on PC, but also it is a Bethesda game. So,
very true.
So I don't know.
Also, I saw an interesting, maybe you're going to talk about this, but an interesting thing about Starfield is that it is a Game Pass game.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are going to check it out on Game Pass, but I don't know how Game Pass works in relation to DLC, because I would assume, much like Skyrim or Fallout, there's going to be a lot of DLC for this, but like, how does that get incorporated in a Game Pass title? Do you just get it, or is there something you have to pay extra for? How does that work, do you think?
That's a good question, because normally, this is another reason why the whole like Starfield like deluxe upgrade situation confuses me, because I feel like most of the time, if there's a game that's going to be released on a subscription platform, they give you the top tier version of it where you get everything. Yeah. They don't just like cheap out and give you the base version and then force you to spend money to actually get the additional upgrades, because they know if you unsub from Game Pass, suddenly you just have the upgrades but not the base game. And so it's like a weird situation. And so I'm still very confused as to how all of this is going to work once September 1st rolls around. But yeah, the DLC would be a good question. I assume this is another like, you know, Microsoft owns it, so it'll be day one Game Pass. So I assume that'll be there. But if people are subbed to Game Pass and want to download Starfield and they're not able to play on the first, then I don't really know.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
A lot of unknowns.
Yeah, I feel like nobody's going to know until September 1st rolls around, and then we'll figure out what's going on. Because, again, you Google search this stuff, and nobody has a definitive answer on it. At least that
And they're
I've
being
seen.
Tight-lipped about it for whatever reason. Maybe, like, deals are still in the works, and they haven't finalized stuff. But if it was me, and I wanted, like, consumers to buy my product, I would let them know immediately the different ways they could buy it.
Well, yeah, and I think it would be a major selling point to actually go ahead and sub to Game Pass if they were like, okay, Starfield comes out on the 6th, but if you want early access to it, sub to Game Pass and you can play it five days early. But I don't know. Maybe that's not the case. It might be. I don't know.
We'll know in a couple weeks.
That's true.
Do you think we'll get any more? We're done pretty much with Vidocs, I would assume, right? I mean, or do you think there will be something at launch week where there's like one more big push where they're like, this is the culmination of like years and years and we're so excited for next week?
I don't know. I feel like you always get like a story trailer in the week or two leading up to launch as sort of a try to get people hyped again. But I don't know about another Vidoc. I feel like we've reached a point where they're probably done making those and they're just like all hands on deck. Let's finish this up and get it out the door. Even though I guess it's gone gold. So
bugs.
Maybe they're just working on that day one patch. Who knows?
They're that huge day one patch,
which is another weird thing. So if the game is playable on the first, you don't get the day one patch until September 6th, probably. Because that's how it usually goes. I feel like that always ends up being really terrible for whoever releases their game that way. Like every time the people get early access to it and they're like, hey, check out how awful this runs or check out these bugs. And then they're like, I know it'll be fixed in day one patch. But because of all these deals we made, you get to play it now in this sort of semi-broken state.
Well, I wonder if that'll be some of the discourse for people reviewing it, because they're actively playing it right now and they don't have that day one patch. So
I
wonder if articles about this will be like, you know, an imperfect masterpiece or something, where part of the article is dedicated to like, well, my ship was invisible for 2 hours.
I feel like they normally will reference some of the bugs they ran into and then state, but Bethesda says this is going to be fixed in a day one patch. And that's kind of the best you can do as far as like addressing that. But
lots to know. Our other piece of news this week is a little bit of a downer. The Xbox 360 store is set to close finally. It's closing on July 29th of 2024.
Yeah, I don't know that this is as consequential as, like, you remember the Wii U eShop closed down, and the same with the DS, the 3DS eShop. Those closed down, I feel like, earlier this year, actually.
Yeah, the DS one. Because there was that article. Oh, no, it was a PSP. There was an article about how a guy bought every single thing that's possible to buy on the PSP or Vita store before they shut it down. And then he was going to like post videos of him playing every single game.
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know if it was the same person that did that, but somebody like downloaded or bought all the 3DS games and they're like, for games preservation's sake.
Yeah, really.
Let's download all of them and then like give them to the Video Game History Foundation or something like that.
Now, did you ever purchase anything on the Xbox 360 store?
I did, but the reason I say I don't think it's as big a deal as with that is because I'm pretty sure I still have access to like download the 360 games that I do own digitally on my Series X.
Oh, really?
So I like if I wanted to, I could go download Castle Crashers from the 360 era and play that on my Series X. Which is a little bit one of the reasons I got a Series X was because I remembered I had not only bought a bunch of digital games, but I still had like a handful of physical 360 games and I have nothing to play them on. But
well, I was going to ask you, what are some of your favorite Xbox 360 digital-only titles. I feel like the 360 was really when indie games really started to pop off. Yeah. There were a bunch on there that were just, oh, they're exclusively digital for the first time.
The Summer of Arcade was like a huge thing during the 360 era, where like every summer there, it would just be this huge emphasis on like these indie arcade, Xbox 360 arcade games. And it was great. Like you had like Geometry Wars, Retro Evolved or whatever it was called. And you had like, Shadow Complex, I think, was in there. You had, I think, Castle Crashers was one of them, and that Braid game was another.
Those are, so Geometry Wars and Braid were the two that I was going to bring up because both of those, Braid blew my mind because it was like so cool, and it was a difficult game, but it was easy enough where I was able to solve pretty much all the puzzles. And this was like a little bit before I knew to like go online to like look, like watch a YouTube video of how to do it. So I completed Braid pretty much by myself and just like played all the way through it and was very satisfied with the experience. And it was like $10 or something on the Xbox Arcade or whatever. And Geometry Wars as well. I never fully bought that game. I just bought the, or like got the demo that you could play for like 10 minutes or whatever, and then it would lock out. But I would play Geometry Wars over and over and over again when I was in high school. Because it was just like so fun to look at.
I think that game became like a fun thing to play when I was in college. Like people had it on their Xboxes, or I think I had it as well. And so people would just like take turns trying to do stuff. Yeah. It was a very fun game. And it just like visually was like really crazy to look at. But yeah, I remember Shadow Complex being a really cool one. That was
what I don't think I've heard of that.
It's like a Metroidvania basically. But yeah, I don't remember that much about it. I just remember that one being one of the bigger ones in terms of review scores and just like general sentiment, people talking about it a lot. So I played through it and I liked it. I thought it was cool, but every time I think of like old 360 Summer of Arcade titles, that one and definitely like Braid and Castle Crashers come to mind. But I'm trying to remember. I think there were other ones too. Like there was, do you remember that Kingdom for Keflings game where it used your Xbox 360 avatar and you sort of almost Pikmin style would run around this world and like pick up the little Keflings, which were basically little people, and you'd grab them and you could like throw them at a building and be like, hey, build this, and they would build stuff. And so basically it was like a cozy game sort of where you're building up a town and you would assign your Keflings to work on different things, but the player character was just your 360 avatar that you were running around this world in. It was a weird novel idea, I thought at the time, and I played a decent amount of it. I thought it was pretty funny, but it's sort of the end of an era, but I don't know who's still like booting up their 360 to play games, especially since like the Xbox One and the Series X are like so good with backwards compatibility at this point that you really don't need to still own a 360 to be able to play your old games.
I mean, you still see, if you go to GameStop or, you know, just like bargain bin stuff, you do still see like 360 games in just like big tubs that you can like peruse.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're out there. It was a great little system. I mean, it was so prevalent. At least everyone I knew in college had a 360, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone I knew in college had a 360. There was like one guy with a Wii and one guy with a PS3, but everyone else had 360s. And so we would play a lot of Gears of War 2 Horde mode. I remember that being a big one. But you're right. You can also go to like any of your video game like buy sell trade stores and they've just got walls of 360 games that you can pick up for like $2 a piece. Like they're super cheap at this point. But the important thing to note on this story is that there's no impact for being able to purchase or like play backwards compatible titles from the 360 era, because you can still buy them on your current gen console, and most of them are like backwards compatible. So, and a lot of them I think also have like a little performance boost. Like I remember like last week we talked about how Red Dead Redemption, the first one, is coming to Switch and PlayStation 4. And the reason it's not coming to Xbox is because they have that, whatever technology they're using, they have that backwards compatibility program where basically you can play Red Dead Redemption in 4K right now on your Series X. So like there was no need to also release it on that platform. So even though the store is closing down on the 360, it's like, by now, we're multiple generations past. I don't think anybody's still, you know, mainly playing games on their 360. So
yeah,
but it is worth talking about if you still have your 360 around. It does feel a little bit like the end of an era where now, you know, if for whatever reason you haven't upgraded, it's time to put that thing away and get a Series X, I think.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of games coming out this week. So many. I don't know how the end of August turned into like fall release schedule. And none of these are like the huge, big, heavy hitters like the Starfields or whatever else. But they're worth mentioning. So Immortals of Avium, which is that weird like hand powers game that's like a first-person shooter by like ex-Call of Duty people. Mm. That's coming out on Tuesday as this podcast is going up. And later on in the week is Armored Core Fires of Rubicon, which we'll come back to because there was a bunch that came out with that game. And then Blasphemous 2 is another one. The first one, I haven't played these. They're Souls-like Metroidvania games. But the first one has a lot of love out there online. People are always praising that game.
I looked at Blasphemous 2 after I completed Hollow Knight because I was like, I got to play another Metroidvania. And it's visually very striking, but it also is like a little bit too gross for me.
Yeah. I understand why people are into it. I don't know if it's particularly my aesthetic as far as like the setting of it and that kind of thing, but it does seem cool. I don't think I will play it, but I think like so far early reviews are very positive for it.
Yeah, people are really liking it. They're saying the sequel really builds on the first one.
Yeah, so that's very cool that that's out as well, or will be out this week. And then another one I didn't even put in our show notes, but do you remember that Wayfinder game?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Viewfinder.
Yeah, Wayfinder is... it's that game that everybody saw and like immediately their eyes glazed over because it's a little bit, it looks like off-brand WoW a little bit. It's at least as far as its art style goes, but it's basically a third person action RPG that is trying to do the sort of Destiny / Diablo sort of faux MMO type of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that game is out in early access right now. It might be paid too. I don't think it's free, but I don't know off the top of my head. But I watched Dan Tack, formerly of Game Informer, was streaming that a little bit last night. And so I watched a little bit of it. And it's one of those is all I can say about it. I think it's getting mixed reviews, but I don't know. So that's out there as well. Did you get a chance to see this Armored Core stuff?
No, we talked about this a little before we started recording. They did a huge live stream, like a 2-hour or something stream, where they went over a bunch of stuff. But I haven't really dipped my toes into it. It's not super on my radar, to be honest. But you said something interesting before we started recording. There's PvP modes in this, which neither of us realized.
Yeah, as I did some Googling, I saw that was like announced or at least talked about probably a month or two ago. So like it's been out there. I just haven't been following it close enough to know that PvP was going to be in this game. But it makes sense because FromSoft always tends to do PvP, even though I don't genuinely think about PvP when it comes to FromSoft games. But yeah, it seems like there's going to be some 3v3, 1v1. They did a big long, like 2.5 hour live stream, like a day or two ago as we were recording this. And they brought in Fighting Cowboy, who's a YouTuber, and he was on the show to like show some gameplay and talk about what it feels like to play the game. And they showed some of the PvP stuff. And I don't know, like I'm so back and forth on whether I want to like get into this game, because one, it's FromSoft, so I a little bit believe that it will be good, but mm-hmm. also I don't know if it's my kind of game. But it also, I mean, if you can get over the fact that it's mechs or whatever, it also just kind of looks like a third person action shooter type of a game. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But I'm not normally drawn to this type of game, so.
Yeah, but I agree.
But it does have the unfortunate timing of coming out the week before Starfield. And
we're in a week when, people are still super hot on Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, people are still playing Baldur's Gate, and then Starfield's going to come out. And so this one's a little bit awkwardly positioned. Also, the fact that it's not a Soulsborne game might also be a little bit of a turnoff, but I don't know. Don't know what to expect with this one. I don't know if I'm undervaluing what it will be as far as a big release or not, but do you think you're going to play Baldur's Gate before the end of the year, or is that going to be completely eaten up by Starfield at this point?
I don't know. I keep seeing stuff about how great it is. My group that I play Dungeons and Dragons with, or actually we're playing Pathfinder right now, have expressed an interest in checking it out as like a group. So if that actually does happen, maybe I would check it out. And if that doesn't happen, I don't know. It's definitely very, very interesting to me. And as I've said on the podcast before, I played a lot of Baldur's Gate 2 back in the day. And I love Dungeons and Dragons, even though Wizards of the Coast have been questionable lately. I still love the setting of like Faerun, and I like the systems and whatnot. I am cautiously optimistic about whatever this weird new edition that they're making that's going to come out in like maybe 2024, not sixth edition. They're not calling it sixth edition. They're calling it like Dungeons and Dragons. I don't remember what they're calling it, but it's not sixth edition.
Well, yeah, I was going to
say. But I'm cautiously optimistic for that.
I was going to say, you could basically replace your like Pathfinder time with just Baldur's Gate and still get your D&D experience.
You really could. That's what I read a review that was basically like, if you play this with friends, it's just like having a slightly dumb DM, but it is like a D&D experience.
Yeah, that is one of the complaints I've heard, is that the DM is like not at all friendly to you. They do not care if your characters die. It's a little, and I was watching Kyle Bossman stream it, and he was having that complaint where he was like, no like reasonably good DM would ever let some of this stuff happen to you, because like, oh yeah, you created this character for like a week or two, and now like you got into this weird situation where you walked in on some trolls and they just like beat your brains out and all
demolish you.
Now all your characters are dead, sorry. So yeah, it's not as friendly as playing with like an actual DM, but they're sort of trying to give you a D&D like experience, but
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I don't know. For me, I don't know what it is about like the CRPG format that I don't really love, because I can get into like some tactics based like RPGs. Like I really like Fire Emblem, but I think it's the fact that is grid based. I think something about that adds a structure to it that makes it not feel overwhelming.
Well, you know, I just read an article about how there's a mod pack for Baldur's Gate 3 that basically turns it into Dragon Age Origins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it goes like full third person, and you use like WASD to move around, and it's like shaping it to be more in that vein as opposed to like top down.
Hmm. I wonder how that would work, because like Dragon Age Origins was not turn based.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm interested to see what that actually means. I haven't checked out the mod pack or anything. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. Yeah, I think also, like, I find it a little bit overwhelming because there's, like, so many choices you have to make in combat where it's like, okay, I want to draw a torch here, but to do that, that uses up my action and now I can't attack. And then there's, oh, but you should have used shove here to knock somebody off a thing. And, like, in a game like Fire Emblem, you're never having to make those decisions. You can basically, you know, you move around on a grid and you assign attacks, and that's something that I can wrap my head around and understand. I don't know if it's just like simplified enough that somebody who's dumb like me can figure it out, or if, like, I don't know, Baldur's Gate 3 is just like a little bit too open-ended on what can possibly happen that it overwhelms me. But I don't know. I do think it will probably end up being game of the year at this point. I think enough people have, like, praised it enough that it is possible that it will end up higher than Tears of the Kingdom. And part of that is because Breath of the Wild was, like, a thing. And so people are going to say, well, it's more of that. So
that's a good point.
Let's go for the new thing. Plus, I do think on, like, those like reviews aggregator websites, it has a higher rating than Tears of the Kingdom. Like, it has surpassed that. So I don't know if that's a factor that people take into account, but so it probably will end up being game of the year. But I'm also still very curious to see what the reception is for Starfield, because I think I'm gonna like Starfield regardless, but I mean, I could be wrong. It could end up being a complete disaster, and who knows. But I suspect that I'm going to like it regardless of the critical reception for it. But I also think that there's going to be a lot of people who are, like we talked about, comparing it directly to Baldur's Gate, and it'll get a little bit short shrift because of that. But I could be wrong. What have we been playing and watching?
I've only been playing / watching one thing, and that is, I talked about it a couple weeks ago, but my girlfriend and I are working our way through, she's never seen, and it's been a long time since I've seen, all of Venture Brothers in the lead up to that movie that just came out in July, I think at the end of July. So show's still great. Parts of it definitely don't hold up, but it's still, like, super solid, mostly. And we're, I think, like, pretty deep into season 2 at this point. And it's great. I love it. And it's got a very unique point of view. And I don't know. So many things about it are things that I love. I highly recommend Venture Brothers if you've never watched it. It does take a little bit of time to get off the ground and start to have, like, ongoing storylines.
I think that's why I fell off of it, is because I was in that period of time where it hadn't really started doing that. But
by, like, mid-season 2, you start to see, like, okay, characters we've seen before are coming back, and, like, things progress. Nothing's, like, a one-off. And, like, all the fourth wall breaking that they do, I think, was very forward-thinking when they were creating it. Now that's, like, commonplace in shows. But, that's pretty much all I've been doing. It's been busy at work, so I haven't had time to play a lot of extra stuff. But I'm very curious. Zach, you've written down that you're playing Fallout New Vegas.
The caveat to this week's what we're playing and watching is I haven't actually been playing Fallout New Vegas. This is a playing, watching, / listening. I found, like, I scrolled through my podcast queue, which is a complete disaster, but there's all kinds of stuff in there. And at one point I had added an episode of Retronauts where they talked about Fallout New Vegas. And I was listening to it and it got me really nostalgic for Fallout New Vegas as we're approaching, you know, Starfield, the next big, like, Bethesda RPG. And I know Fallout New Vegas was made by Obsidian, but you know what I'm saying. And so it really, really got me nostalgic because they had, like, the little music cues in between segments where they play some of the music that you would hear on, like, the Pip-Boy while you're playing. And there really is something to that in the Fallout universe of having, like, the happy-go-lucky, like, 50s music playing while you're just, like, exploring this devastated wasteland, and there's all these crazy creatures that you're dealing with. But they just kind of talked about like where they were when it initially came out and what was going on in their lives at that time, and like sort of revisiting it recently, what it was like. And it got me nostalgic for when I was playing it, because when it first came out, I was like weirdly not in a place where I was ready to like play that game, so I didn't play very much of it. And then when I did actually go back and play through it, it was like the PS4 and Xbox One had already come out, but I like for a solid year or so there, I was still just playing games on 360. And this was one of them. So I definitely have like vivid memories of playing through this game on my 360, thinking, who needs a PS4 or an Xbox One? This is great. But that game, I definitely think, is the best of the Fallout games, at least in my opinion. I haven't played the first two. I should say I'm talking specifically about Fallout 3, New Vegas, and Fallout 4. And they a little bit, I think, have sort of taken on a similar like thing of the Mass Effect trilogy, where like everyone's favorite one is the second one, which would be New Vegas in this case, because it's better in terms of its writing and its characters. But like I still have a lot of nostalgia for that first one. And so it's hard to say if I had to rank them. I probably would put the second one ahead of the first one, but there's something about the setting of the Capital Wasteland in Fallout 3 that I get really nostalgic about.
Well, and the opening of the first one is so iconic, where you're like a baby, and then you're like, you go to school and whatnot. You have that whole opening sequence where you get out of the vault.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It is very cool, and it is a little bit hard to top that. For me, and like I love that you're really dealing with like the Brotherhood of Steel and the Enclave in that game. And I don't know if it's just because like when you're going around doing some of that stuff, you have like those little radio bots that are floating around, or you have like your Pip-Boy on, and it's like playing weird like music that's like patriotic music. Where, because you have like the president of like the Enclave or whatever that you're dealing with as well. And so when it comes to the summertime and I start hearing some of the like patriotic music, or you have those patriotic holidays, for some reason it gets me in a weird mood to play Fallout because of that. And then like for Fallout 4, I think it's kind of a similar story to Mass Effect 3, where people were like, mechanically it's probably the best of those games, but it's also like maybe the least favorite or satisfying the three games. So I just realized that when I was thinking about those games, I was like, you know what, it is kind of a similar story to the Mass Effect.
It's an apt comparison to make.
Anyway, I haven't been playing Fallout New Vegas, but I listened to a podcast where they talked a lot about it, and it got me really nostalgic for it, and so I was like, worth talking about. Maybe I should go back and play Fallout New Vegas at some point. I bet it would run pretty well on the Steam Deck these days.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it would.
I actually am a little bit curious what you could do with the mods on PC. I'm sure like the mod scene for that is like crazy these days. Yeah. But the games I have been playing is, I actually didn't write it in our show notes. I'll write it at some point. But I finally played A Short Hike.
Whoa, did you beat it?
I did beat it. So it's a very short game, as you might imagine, but it is that game where you're on this sort of island area and you're like a little bird and you just like run around and collect stuff. And the point of, I guess, the story, if you could say it had one, would be that you're just trying to hike to the summit of this mountain that's sort of at the middle of the island. And it's a very cute, very satisfying game to just like run around and explore, and you're picking up these different golden feathers that make it so that you can fly higher and climb higher and all of that. And I know you also love this game, so.
I loved it, yeah. My only criticism of it was that I would sometimes, the whole map is a circle basically, because it's all built around this central peak that you're eventually going to summit. And I a little bit got, I wish there was some sort of like map that I could pull up, because I would get confused where I was, especially there are a couple of quests where someone is like, hey, race me. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I can definitely race you now because I have a bunch of golden feathers. So I could like get up and start to glide, but I have no idea how to get to the end point, because they'll be like, oh, just like go to the like power thing or whatever, the big like power line. And I won't remember how to, so I have to basically track next to them because I don't know the path. Yeah,
that happened to me as well.
That's my only criticism. I wish there was a way to sort of like zoom out and see where I was on the island every once in a while, just so I can get my bearings. But other than that, I loved it. It was a wonderful game.
They just needed to add an actual map that you could grab in your inventory. Cause you know how, like once you start doing the fishing stuff, there's like they give you like a little record book that you can pull up in your inventory. And it's just like the list of all the different fish in the game and which one like was the largest one that you caught. They need to do something similar with a map where they just have a map in the inventory that you can click on, it opens up a little thing. But yeah, I had the same problem where, because I platinumed it on PS5. And so in order to do that, you have to find like certain things that are located in very specific spots around the map. And when you look up a guide for how to find that stuff, like they show a top-down map. And I'm like, that's great and all, but I can't orient myself from where I'm at currently in the game to where you're showing me on this map in your video. So I don't know how to get there. And so I would just have to explore until I eventually was like, okay, now I'm in this spot where I can figure out where they're showing me. And so it was a little awkward in that way. But yeah, great game. It's very short. Highly recommended. It's super cheap. A lot of the time.
Yeah, it's very, very cheap.
So definitely worth playing through. You can play it through in like one sitting. Great soundtrack too. Very, very good soundtrack. And the other thing I've been playing is I finished Evil West. We talked a little bit about it last week. I was pretty close to being done with it at that point. I have finished it and I have all the trophies but one. Where you have to like upgrade all the weapons, or you have to purchase all the upgrades for all the weapons. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you have to pick up cash, which is like a sort of a collectible that's hidden around the map. You find different cash drops that you can pick up. And I think you have to play through the game multiple times in order to get enough cash to actually complete that, which you know in a game like this, it's fairly short, especially if you skip all the cutscenes. There's like only so many levels, so it's not like a huge ask. It's not like, you know, asking you to play through Tears of the Kingdom twice, but and you can like you jump back into levels with like the chapter select, so it's not like that huge a thing, but it's just going to take the time to do that. But I thought it was a good game. I make the comparison of God of War because of the fact that just like the camera positioning and where the melee button is tied to the same button, the controls are pretty similar. But instead of it being melee focused, though it is like it does have melee, it's more third person shooter focused. So like it's like a combination of God of War and Doom, because of the setting where. Similar to Doom, you're sort of fighting these creatures of the underworld or the night, you know, and like you can shoot them until they have like the weak spot, and you can go do like an animation takedown type of thing similar to Doom, and then you get like drops out of that. But also similar to Doom, throughout the game you're getting these new weapons that you're upgrading. And so, you know, by the end of Doom, you've got like a shotgun and an assault rifle and a rocket launcher and all these crazy weapons. Very similar thing here in Evil West, where you have just like you're armed to the teeth, where he's basically got guns draped all over his body. And so you're upgrading them. So yeah, I think a great comparison would be to say this is God of War 2018 meets Doom 2016 or whatever year that game was. And but it's made by like the people who made the Shadow Warrior. Is that the right name? So like it does. It's not taking itself super seriously. So it's not as like jokey and like trying to make one-liners. And like the main character of the Shadow Warrior games is kind of trying to be like Deadpool. It's not doing that.
Yeah.
But it's also not taking itself super seriously. But it's like a really good sort of old school style game where it's not this open world thing or open zone thing. It's just like, nope, here's a cutscene. Okay, now you're going through a level, collect some items along the way, and take out enemies in these like very scripted like areas where like a bunch of you can tell that it's going to be a zone where a bunch of enemies are going to come in because it's like designed that way. But yeah, a really satisfying combat style, I would say, that was fun to play through even on the hardest difficulty, which I completed. And now that I'm going back through in like the new game plus mode, I've like set it to easy because none of the rest of the trophies demand any sort of damage settings or difficulty settings. So
you're running by everybody.
Yeah. So you're just like tearing through everything super easily, which is great. But yeah, I recommend that game. It came out late last year, like late November last year. And I feel like a lot of people missed it. And then I just remember early on in the year, a lot of people like praising it, like, how did we miss this game? Like, go back and play this because it's good. So anyway, on that note, do you have any parting wisdom?
I do this week. Zach, have you ever heard of a salt pig?
No.
I my girlfriend got me one as a nice little present, and it is basically you probably see it on YouTube a lot, because like a lot of YouTube chefs will basically, instead of a salt shaker, they have just like a little clay pot that they just keep salt in, so you can just do a pinch right out of the pot. Which I for a while was just using this little cup that I didn't need for anything else, so I would just like pour salt into that so I could just like do a pinch of salt whenever I needed to when I was cooking. But she got me a nice little salt pig, which I didn't even know that was the terminology. So if you're a home cook and you're looking for a cool way to store your salt, check out a salt pig.
Is it shaped like a pig?
You probably can find ones that are, but I don't believe, traditionally, I don't think they are.
Is it different than like, you have those little, I guess they call them just like salt keepers that are like little bowls that just have a lid that you put on top?
I think that is a salt pig.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Maybe we're just using different terms for the same thing.
Possibly. I had never heard the term before, but she was like, oh yeah, that's what it's called.
I have Googled salt pig, and a lot of them are like off access or axis. They're like, it looks like the corner of a piece of piping where it's like rounded a little bit.
Yeah, that's a very popular one. Mine has a top to it, though. It has like a little cork top. No, it's like it isn't a cork. It's like made of cork, so it's not like stoppered in there.
Huh.
But it's very light because it's porous. It's like made of the material cork that just is kind of placed on top. And it has like a little concave surface to it. So if I want to, I can use the concave surface to store things as well.
Hmm. I never knew that that's what these were called.
Salt pigs. There you go.
Name, origin. Why is it called salt pig?
I'd love to know.
Well, I'm seeing if I can see. It is supposedly the old Scottish word for pot.
Oh, pig is the Scottish word for pot?
What do they call pigs then?
Yeah, good question.
Old Scottish word for pot is pig. In reverse, I don't know. Anyway, on that note, why don't you go ahead and follow us on Instagram, X, I almost called it Twitter, and YouTube at Starside Cafe, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.